Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the 32nd annual Grain Millers Harvest Showdown in Yorkton is fast approaching, and there's some entry deadlines coming up tomorrow. We'll tell you about those on today's program. Saskatchewan feeder cattle prices were showing some downward movement this past week. That will be part of our beef and forage report today. Keeping clubroot low and local is being promoted as the way to prevent the widespread of the soil-borne illness. And we will talk to the Canola Council of Canada's Autumn Barnes about how to prevent clubroot from spreading in your fields. And, of course, the weekly overview of the wheat market has been provided by Marlena Borsch of Mercantile Consulting. We'll hear from her on today's program. All that and much more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, it's overcast here in the Yorkton area today, and it sounds like we could be getting some precipitation before the day's out.
Yeah, and looking south of the border right now, that's where the rain is. The storm system itself is producing, it's still sitting over South Dakota, but out ahead of it, just a lot of moisture feeding in. We've actually got a tropical connection from this system. We have Pamela, which was down in the Pacific, cutting across Mexico toward Texas, starting to feed some moisture in. We've got the moisture already in place from the storm system. And it's been a heavy snowmaker for parts of the Rockies, and now a heavy rainmaker for eventually us, but especially areas to our south. A soaking rain today over North Dakota for most of the system. There is some snow cutting in on the backside too, and we'll get that transition as well. We're not going to get a lot of snow from this system, but there is the potential for a decent amount of rainfall between a little bit coming in this afternoon and then some heavier stuff later on tonight. Many of us getting, by the time it's all said and done, well over an inch of rainfall, and then factor in a little bit of wet snow. And that's going to be minor. We've got, as mentioned yesterday, the warm ground and the moisture more limited on the snow side of the system. Plus, temperatures themselves stay above freezing, but not much above. We're around 8 this afternoon. Rain sets up through the day. It'll be light, not expecting much as far as measurable rainfall goes through the afternoon. A gusty breeze, gusts 35 to 40 by the end of the day. Tonight, the rain does pick up later evening through the night. That's when we get the bulk of the measurable rainfall, 15 to 20 millimeters through the night, low around 4, the wind 20 to 40 kilometers per hour, gusting over 50 at times. And that strong wind continues tomorrow. The rain eases up. It's still ongoing through the day, but it's mostly light rain. The temperature is steady near 4, might drop back a little bit. 4 tends to be a rain number. The air aloft determines it, and it's going to be dropping, getting colder. But through most of the day, it's warm enough aloft to keep this falling as rain. Toward the end of the day, a little wet snow does mix in, and a few flurries should take over for Thursday night, even as we stay just above freezing. Gusty wind to go along with it. Winds gusting tomorrow afternoon, 55 to 60 kilometers per hour, starting to slowly back down Thursday night and Friday. Once we shake this system, there's some quiet weather to get through, and temperatures will recover from the brief cool down. Will be around 9 with cloud cover giving way to sunshine Friday. Sunshine for the weekend, 14 Saturday, 16 Sunday.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour. The Paw is at 8 degrees, Swan River and Dauphin 7, Brandon 6, Show Lake Russell and Roblin 5. Regina, Saskatoon, and Broadview-Mooseman are at 4. Hudson Bay and Wynyard-Wadena-Kelvington, 5. Indian Head, 3. The Yorkton-Melville region has an overcast sky, a northeast wind at 18 kilometers an hour. 76% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 5 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 8 degrees and dropped to a low of 1 degree. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is 10 degrees. The normal low is minus 1 degree. The sun rose in Yorkton at 7:10 this morning, and it will set at 6:02 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Sprague at 14 degrees, the cold spot Lynn Lake at minus 5. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Prince Albert at 10 degrees, the cold spot was Leader at minus 11 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after these messages. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The 32nd annual Grain Millers Harvest Showdown in Yorkton is fast approaching. It runs from November 3rd to the 6th at the Gallagher Center. Brett Callan is a committee member for the Commercial Cattle Show and Sale. He says there's some entry deadlines coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, you betcha. We've got some starting this week, so we'd just like to touch on them and remind everybody to get their entries in, or anybody new to give us a shout and see what we can do for you, and maybe get you involved in the show as much as we can. So I guess starting with this week, the Commercial Cattle Show, sponsored by Cornerstone Credit Union, of course. The deadlines for them are coming up Thursday, October 14th. So that's anybody wanting to sell your heifers, open or bred. Heifers, both pens of 3 and pens of 5. That deadline, like I say, is coming up Thursday, October 14th. And then our futurity show is sponsored by Heartland Livestock in Yorkton there. That's for the pen of opens, the pen of breads, the pen of bulls, your sweetheart classic, your king of the ring. Basically covers everything else that's going to be happening in our show. That one's coming up on Thursday, October 14th as well. So anything involved with the Commercial Cattle Show or the futurity show, those two deadlines are coming up here on Thursday. If you're looking for entry forms for that, they're available on our website, yorktonexhibition.com, or give the office a call and they'd be more than happy to help you out. So, and then some coming up here later in the month, we got our pedigreed seed show. The deadline for that is October 29th. So you got a little bit of time on that to check your bin, see if you can give us a couple of Ziploc bags full of grain would be great. Commercial Grain Show, sponsored by Westland Insurance and SGI. Their deadline for Friday, October 22nd, that would be the percentage of oil deadline. So for your canola entries that you want to put into that class, that one's coming up pretty quick, actually. And then every other grain will be due on Friday, October 29th as well. And then the Forage Show, sponsored by the cooperators here in Yorkton, Monday, October 18th for that. We did have a early deadline, and we actually did have a lot of entries for that. Just with the way stuff was looking, I think guys are wanting to feed. So the Forage Show deadline for that is Monday, October 18th. Very cheap way to get your forage tested. So $25 to enter that. Awfully reasonable to get your forage tested to see what's going on with it this year.
What's the best way to find out more details about the entry process?
Yeah, go to yorktonexhibition.com or give the office a shout. The number for there is 783-4800.
And is there anything you would like to add?
Yeah, honestly, just pay attention to the deadlines on those. We've also got a couple other ones. The Young Rancher Recognition Award. Anybody, you know, if you're looking to recognize your neighbor who does a heck of a job raising their cows, got to be under 40 to enter that one. So, and that one, a neighbor, just do a write-up, send up why you think they're doing a great job in the industry. Just a little way of the exhibition giving a recognition to some outstanding young rancher in the area. Then we also have the Farmer Recognition Award. No age cap on that one. You can be as old as you want to be recognized for that one. You can find both those those entry forms online as well. So if you think a neighbor's doing a bang-up job with their crop or with their cattle, by all means, just enter them. It's just a great way to give a little bit of recognition to somebody in the area.
Entry forms for all of the Grain Millers Harvest Showdown events can be found online at www.yorktonexhibition.com. It's time now for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of McDougall Auctioneering.
Beef and Forage Report.
Saskatchewan feeder cattle prices were showing some downward movement this past week. Acting provincial cattle specialist Natasha Wilkie says volume was up and some prices were reflecting the numbers.
Well, once again, it's that time of year, so we saw some prices go up while others dropped. Any price increases we did see happened with the heavier weight categories. And so this is especially true for the feeder steer prices. And so they were noticeably lower in the lower to mid-weight categories, but steady, like I said, in those heavier weight categories. And so prices there ranged from $267.86 per hundredweight for the 300 to 400 pound weight category to $182.50 per hundredweight for the 900 plus pound weight category. And so the largest price increase we saw was in the 800 to 900 pound weight category, with prices going up 36 cents. And so they ended the week averaging $193.61 per hundredweight. The largest price decrease we saw was in the 500 to 600 pound weight category, with those guys going down $7.67 per hundredweight. So they ended the week averaging $217. And then when we look at the heifers, the average weekly prices, they were mainly lower, I guess, across the reported weight categories. And so prices there ranged from $212 per hundredweight for the 300 to 400 pound weight category to $175 for the 800 plus pound weight category. And so the only price increase we saw for the heifers was in the 700 to 800 pound weight category, with those girls going up 99 cents per hundredweight. And so they ended the week averaging $179.96. The largest price decrease we saw was in the 300 to 400 pound weight category, and those girls went down $8.29 per hundredweight.
What were the main factors affecting the feeder cattle market this past week?
Well, once again, volume's our biggest factor. I think we can definitely say the fall run's happening out there. The higher weight categories probably stayed steady. Just my guess is that the supply of yearlings is starting to dwindle, so those heavier weight calves coming in is starting to dwindle. The good thing we saw this past week was the feeder futures markets. It was an increase, so week over week increase, I guess. So let's hope that plays into the cash market next week.
What were marketings?
So Canfax reported a total of 23,970 head of cattle sold in Saskatchewan last week, and that's up quite a bit from the just under 17,000 head the previous week, and again, quite a bit higher than the 17,333 head marketed during the same week in 2020.
And what happened with market-ready cattle prices?
So they edged lower again this week. The price for Alberta Fed steers, it ended the week at $157.26 per hundredweight, and so that's a drop of 45 cents. When we look at the cull-cow market, we saw the price of D2 slaughter cows went down $2.23 per hundredweight. So they ended the week averaging $79.17. The price of D3 slaughter cows saw a price decline of $1.71 per hundredweight. And so they ended the week averaging $69.43 per hundredweight.
Acting provincial cattle specialist Natasha Wilkie compiles the weekly cattle market update for the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, Ag Review.
Yesterday was National Farmers Day, and Climate Corporation released an Angus Reid report. The report reveals a high level of trust in Canadian farmers, with 3 in 4 Canadians confident in farmers' ability to meet Canada's food demand. The confidence was strongest in Saskatchewan and Manitoba at 93%, followed by Alberta at 84%. The consumer confidence in farmers was lower in BC at 68% and Quebec at 71%. Ontario is 78%. Substantially more Canadians gained respect for Canadian agriculture during the pandemic than lost it, with nearly two-thirds saying they now have more appreciation for the industry, particularly in the area of domestic food security. Climate Corporation spokesman Marvin Talsma says confidence in farming is generally high, but public knowledge of the agriculture industry remains low, and he wants to change that. He says there is an outdated view of agriculture, with only 12% of Canadians who see agriculture as more innovative than other industries. He says the public does not realize the amount of innovation and adoption of technology on Canadian farms. On farms with 10,000 acres of cropland, 94% used automated steering and 97% use GPS. Shareholders in Canada's largest John Deere farm equipment dealer have approved the sale of the company to Brandt Tractor Limited. The $302 million deal to sell Service Equipment Corporation to Brandt was originally announced in August. The October 12th shareholder meeting saw 97.7% of votes cast in favor of the deal, which remains subject to approval of the Court of Queen's Bench of Alberta and other customary closing conditions. Service says it expects the transaction will be finalized in the next few weeks, mid to late October of this year. Brandt has agreed to pay $19.50 per share in cash for all common shares in Service, excluding the 9% stake that Brandt already owns. Headquartered in Calgary, Service operates 64 dealership locations in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, selling John Deere farm equipment and Peterbilt trucks, as well as Clark, Selleck, Doosan, JLG, and Bowman material handling equipment. The company is publicly traded on the TSX. The Brandt Group of Companies, based in Regina, is the world's largest privately owned John Deere construction and forestry equipment dealer, with more than 100 dealer locations in Canada and the U.S. As equipment rolls over the finish line for the 2021 growing season, September sales numbers are in from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. In Canada's two-wheel drive tractor market, less than 40 horsepower tractors saw a steady increase of 13.5% year-over-year, rounding out at 1,717 sold units. Total two-wheel drive farm tractors saw a 7.7% increase for the same time period. On the other hand, the four-wheel drive tractor category is down significantly by 24.3% year-over-year. Self-propelled combines experienced almost the opposite effect, with a 23.5% increase from September of 2020 up to 142 units. In the U.S., meanwhile, it was the 100-plus horsepower tractors that experienced the largest climb in the two-wheel drive tractor category at 23%. Much like the Canadian market, four-wheel drive tractors had a slight drop of 1.3% year-over-year to 369 units. Self-propelled combines in the U.S. increased the most overall, up 34.6% to 848 units. An online service farmers use to manage grain sales with ADM's elevators and processing plants across Canada, along with Cargill and ADM elevators in the U.S., is under new ownership. ADM and Cargill, the two major U.S.-based agribusinesses that set up GrainBridge in 2019, have announced they've sold it to Bushel, a Fargo, North Dakota-based ag software and service provider that plans to gradually transition GrainBridge over to its own platform. On GrainBridge, which also now handles services previously run through the ADM FarmView system, growers are able to toggle between best price and nearest location when viewing bids on the system dashboard, and can also get notifications for local cash bids and basis and set multiple price targets per delivery period or per location. Cargill, which is already also set up on the Bushel platform, and ADM will be among over 200 local ag co-ops, processors, feed millers, and ethanol and other biofuel companies using the Bushel system. Bushel, on its website, said almost 2,000 grain handling facilities across both the U.S. and Canada already use its products daily. Its users include firms such as The Andersons and Schooler, who are among the charter members of Roger, a dry bulk freight management platform also operating on Bushel. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's cloudy and 5 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Keeping clubroot low and local is being promoted as the way to prevent the spread of the soil-borne disease. The Canola Council of Canada has developed an easy-to-read fact sheet and infographic. It was prepared by Autumn Barnes, an agronomy specialist with the Canola Council of Canada.
Really hard to keep things simple with clubroot. That disease just gets so complicated in a hurry. So we're trying to simplify things and make it make a little bit more sense. So the whole goal for farmers and for people who support farmers should be to keep the clubroot spores low, so as low of a concentration of them in the soil as possible, and to keep them local, so don't move them around. So basically, yeah, we want to anchor them down as we can and try and reduce them as fast as we can.
What's the best way to keep those spore numbers down?
So the best way to keep spore numbers low would be to follow a crop rotation at least 1 in 3. So that's a minimum 2-year break between canola. That would be one of the most important things. We know that 1 in 3 rotation can break down about 90% of clubroot spores. So if growers stick to that and they start with a lower spore concentration to begin with, you know, that's doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Probably the next most important thing would be scouting. Even if you're in an area that you don't have confirmed clubroot yet, it's really important to scout in the fall, you know, late summer or fall, pull up roots and look for any sort of swelling or growth on the roots. You kind of want to pay attention, especially in the higher traffic or higher moisture areas when you're scouting. But yeah, crop rotation scouting, growing clubroot resistant varieties, super important, even if you're in an area that doesn't have clubroot. Actually, clubroot resistant varieties, bringing them in early can actually help us maintain low spore concentrations, whereas if clubroot spores get introduced to a field and then a susceptible variety is grown, you're going to be amplifying and multiplying those spores really fast. So knowing that it's a little tricky to find clubroot early, it's especially important to grow clubroot resistance in addition to all these other management practices. And then, you know, another thing we can do is control weeds. So often people think of clubroot as a canola disease, and it is a canola disease, but first and foremost, it's a soil disease. So it's there even when canola is not. And any brassica weeds like your volunteer canola, stinkweed, flixweed, shepherd's purse, mustards, all of those will be multiplying clubroot spores in your non-canola years. So really important to control those weeds.
Do many producers use those clubroot resistant cultivars?
More and more every year. In 2020, I think we were around 40% across Prairie Canada. In Alberta, it's a little higher just because that's, you know, we have more history with clubroot in Alberta. But every year, the number gets higher. And the goal is, you know, all the seed companies have agreed to be putting forward clubroot resistant varieties going forward. So all varieties will be clubroot resistant in the next few years. But we need to make sure that growers are, you know, building that demand to match the supply, because it is such an important practice.
The Canola Council of Canada has come out with a couple of infographics to help producers visualize the clubroot issue.
These have actually been pretty fun to make. So there's some nice visuals sort of showing what happens as spore concentration increases, that the risk of clubroot increases, and kind of breaks down that low and local messaging. Importantly as well, how to keep spores local would be biosecurity, so trying to prevent the introduction and spread of spores, and then reducing tillage, which is really reducing soil erosion. And then another thing actually, which I think is really cool on these new infographics, is breaking down patch management for clubroot a little bit more. So that's sort of a newer way to manage the pest, and really what it involves is managing a patch of clubroot in the field separately from the rest of the field, so that you can reduce spore concentration and then also prevent the spores from spreading. So in these new resources, there's a bit more of a break on how farmers can be doing patch management in their field.
Autumn Barnes is an agronomy specialist with the Canola Council of Canada. You can see the new fact sheet at clubroot.ca.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for December closed at 129 even today. That's down 25. February live cattle closed at 133.55, down 70. November feeder cattle closed at 160.97, down 82. January feeder cattle closed at 161.45, down 132. December lean hogs closed at 78.15, down 2. February lean hogs closed at 80.85, down 40. And that's the livestock market conditions. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back right after this.
Or,
welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Marlena Borsch of Mercantile Consulting has provided her weekly overview of the wheat market. It was issued through the Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission yesterday afternoon, right after the USDA's WASDE report was published.
In the report, U.S. wheat supplies were lowered in accordance with the U.S. small grain summary, as we discussed last week. The USDA global wheat outlook for 21-22 is for reduced production, lower consumption, and nearly unchanged trade around 200 million tons, and smaller ending stocks at 277 million tons versus 283 last month. The Canadian wheat production was reduced by 2 million tons to 21 million tons on reduced harvested area. The StatsCan estimate is still at 21.7 in comparison. This is a bullish report on wheat and especially supportive of hard red spring wheat. Regarding futures, spring wheat futures were the only wheat futures able to maintain their week-over-week rally last week. This Monday morning, Minneapolis wheat is the strongest in futures, with confirmation of lower production of hard red spring wheat in today's WASDE, not only in the U.S., but globally. We have not seen the close today, but last Friday, these 21 Chicago winter wheat closed at 7.34, down 23 cents on the week. These 21 Kansas hard red winter wheat closed at 7.34, down 16.6 cents on the week. And these 21 Minneapolis hard red spring wheat closed at 9.46, up 8 cents on the week. In the cash markets, there was some varied activity as well. Today's GASC Egyptian tender was canceled. Likely, they decided to wait out the WASDE report and then retender later. Tunisia did buy 100,000 tons of durum last week at $677 to $686 US dollars per ton, which is about $21 a bushel Canadian for Thunder Bay. The Philippines tendered for 224,000 tons of wheat for these through March, that's feed wheat, but we have not seen any results yet. U.S. export sales last week were in the middle range of expectations at 333,000 tons, but the season total of 419 million bushel remains 21% down on last year. We note that the Baltic Panama Index appears to have topped out, but freight rates for handies and Capesize vessels continue to rise. To continue, here are some of last week's major news in the wheat markets by major origin, and we are starting with Canada. Final yield data on from Saskatchewan Agriculture had hard red spring wheat at 30 bushel per acre. This was 3 bushel per acre higher than in their previous September 6 estimate. The updated SaskAg estimate is in line with Stats Canada Sept 14 estimate at 30.3 bushel per acre. This is for spring wheat. This means that 15.3 million tons of spring wheat were produced in Canada compared to 25.8 million last year. About 6 million of that were produced in Saskatchewan this year. Regarding 21-22 Canadian wheat exports, according to StatsCan, Canada exported 1.5 million tons of wheat during the month of August. This is down 25% from last year. Japan was the top destination for Canadian wheat, importing 186,000 tons, an 18% increase from last year. In shipping 9. Canadian wheat exports were 126,000 tons for a season total of 2.5 million. That's 66% of last year's volume. Switching to Durham wheat. Sask Ag left their final Durham yield unchanged from their previous estimate at 19 bushel per acre for Saskatchewan. StatsCan is currently using 24.4 bushel per acre for Saskatchewan. The smaller yield reported by Sask Ag would cause production in Saskatchewan to fall an additional 655,000 tons to 2.9 million tons from StatsCan's 3.5 million ton estimate. In comparison, last year Canada produced 6.6 million tons of durum. Have a look at the graphs in the written report. They are telling. Regarding exports, Stats Canada shows that 28% more Canadian durum was exported this August compared to the same time last year. Most of the increase can be attributed to a 70,000-ton sale to the U.S. and a 60,000-ton sale to Belgium. U.S. imports are three times higher than last year and reflect the small durum harvest in the United States. The primary destination for durum Canadian durum in August was Morocco, whose imports are consistent with last year's. However, we think the demand by Morocco will ease this fall as domestic production in that country has recovered from the previous year's drought. There was a notable decrease in exports to Italy, which imported just 22% of last year's amount. Per the table we inserted in the report, durum production in Italy has increased from 3.9 million in 2020 to 4.3 million in 2021. That's an 11% improvement. EU durum production has increased from 7.2 million to 8 million tons, also an 11% improvement. The European Union generally imports between 1.5 to 3 million tons of durum annually from all origins, and between 600,000 tons and 2 million tons of durum from Canada. Canada will not have enough tonnage to maintain the export pace to the EU of the past 2 years, especially given the increased demand by the US this crop year. Regarding trades on durum last week, we mentioned that Tunisia bought 100,000 tons at 677 to 686 last week at a comparison to 21 Canadian per bushel for Thunder Bay. We know that off-farm durum was sold for 21 and a quarter again in central Saskatchewan late last week. To conclude the section on Canadian wheat, we do not see any reason for the markets to move lower, although some of the steam has come out of the wheat futures section. But consumers remain undercovered on milling wheat, which will keep milling wheat strong, as does the supportive WASDE report. Moving on to U.S. wheat. Winter wheat planting in the U.S. is 47% complete, just ahead of the average speed. There was some rain in the plains and PNW, which brought some relief to the severe drought. However, drought conditions expanded in Nebraska, Wyoming, Colorado, and Montana. U.S. wheat sales last week were within expectations at 333,000 tons. Total commitments are now 419 million bushel, down 21% from last year. Regarding the USDA report, projected 21-22 U.S. ending stocks were reduced by 35 million bushel to 580 million. These are the lowest U.S. ending stocks since 07-08. Average trade guesses ahead of the USDA report were for U.S. wheat ending stocks at 573 million bushel, a little bit smaller than we actually saw earlier today. Australia. Rain in Australia continues in the east and south, and farmers will probably be hoping for drier conditions soon to avoid any potential quality deterioration at harvest. Argentina. We talked a bit about the Argentine GM wheat situation last week. There was to be a meeting between Brazil and Argentina last Thursday to discuss imports of Argentine GM wheat. This meeting has been postponed to an unspecified date in November. How this issue will play out is impossible to tell. The situation seems irrational, as no one professes to be in favor. Brazilian millers are against GM wheat, saying they will refuse to import Argentine GM wheat, and the Argentine Farmers Association, cooperatives and traders seem to be lobbying against the production and trade of GM wheat as well. There is some talk that the Brazilian imports could take place with a GM-free certificate, but it is not clear to me as to who would be prepared to issue such a document. Then there's the question of how other potential importers of Argentine wheat will react to GM wheat. Again, we obviously will need to follow the Argentine GM wheat situation going forward. European Union. Matif wheat in Europe made new contract highs early today, but closed down 50 cents. This was before the USDA report was published. Regarding EU wheat, the market is wondering just how much French wheat has been sold to China and what the quality specs are that have been sold. Black Sea wheat. Russian wheat sales are focused on nearby positions only, and this is because of the uncertainty caused by the export tax calculation. The Russian export tax calculation is now above $60 per ton. And crude oil is at three-year highs, which has lifted the ruble to a 14-month high, which is further raising the cost of replacement wheat. So, what can we conclude from all this for the week? Well, the October 12th USDA WASDE report is bullish wheat and especially supportive of hard red spring wheat. Projected 21-22 wheat ending stocks are reduced by 35 million bushel to 580 million. These are the lowest U.S. ending stocks since 2007-08. The USDA global wheat outlook for 21-22 is for reduced production, lower consumption, basically unchanged trade at 200 million tons, and smaller ending stocks by 6 million tons from last month. Incidentally, the Canadian wheat production was reduced by 2 million tons to 21 million on reduced harvested area. The StatsCan estimate is still at 21.7 million tons. We think that consumers remain poorly covered on milling wheat, which will keep milling wheat strong, as will the supportive USDA WASDE report. We see no reason to sell additional tonnage at this time.
And that's Marlena Borsch of Mercantile Consulting in Winnipeg.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. November canola closed at $903.20, up $2.10. January canola closed at $893.90, up $3.10. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $948.75, down 6.25 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at $721.75, down 18 cents. December Chicago wheat closed at 718.75, down 15.25 cents. December corn closed at 512.25, down 10.25 cents. November soybeans closed at 1195.25, down 3 cents. December oats closed at 632.25, down 15.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. Your Farm Bulletin Board is coming up next.
Farm Bulletin Board.
As you heard earlier, the Grain Millers 32nd Annual Harvest Showdown is coming up soon, November 3rd to the 6th at the Gallagher Center here in Yorkton. And of course, there's going to be a number of events coming up, and there's some deadlines to meet for tomorrow. As for event listings, there's a chore team competition, a horsepower showcase, Breeders' Alley, Futurity Heifer Show, commercial cattle show and sale, a country craft and trade show, a commercial grain show, forage show, pedigreed seed show, exotic animal sale, horse pulls, stock dog competition, school tours, a 4-H clinic, a ranch rodeo, and of course PBR. All that coming up at the 32nd Annual Harvest Showdown here in Yorkton, runs November 3rd through the 6th at the Gallagher Center. And that's your Farm Bulletin Board for today. Turning to the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Cloudy with a 60% chance of late day showers, winds east-northeast at 20 to 35 and a high of 8 degrees. For tonight, periods of rain with 15 to 20 millimeters possible, winds north-northwest at 20 to 40 and gusting higher at times, a low of 4. For tomorrow, periods of rain at times mixed with wet snow, winds west-northwest at 20 to 45 and gusty, the temperature steady near 4 degrees. For Friday, sunny, winds west-northwest at 15 to 30 and a high of 9. Saturday, sunny, a high of 14. Sunday, sunny, a high of 16. In the Paw, it's 8 degrees, Swan River and Dauphin, 7, Brandon, 6, Shoal Lake, Russell and Roblin, 5. Regina, Saskatoon and Broadview, Mooseman are at 4, Hudson Bay, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 5, Indian Head, 3. The Yorkton-Melville region now has some light rain, a little earlier than we expected, a northeast wind at 18 kilometers an hour. 76% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 5 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.